Senator Sharon is the author of that bill, and I believe she was the one that Rule 21'd it. So, Senator Sharon, why are we in front of the Rules Committee with Senate File 2000 objecting to the referral?
Thank you. That is correct. Senate File 2000 was heard yesterday and referred directly to the floor, which is an appropriate referral because a change was made in the bill that took out some of the components that would have referred it to judiciary. And the intent all along was to have it go through a process through judiciary and then would have been referred to the Committee on Finance. So my request here, because of the changes that are in the bill, that the referral be changed to the Committee on Finance. The changes was a change that made obligations to the Department of Labor and Industry. It was an unanticipated change, so they were not able to appear and testify as to its financial impact on their resources. There were obligations added to the Department of Labor and Industry. So I'm hoping that this committee will agree to refer the bill to the Committee on Finance.
Any discussion, members? And the motion, I believe, is to adopt the previous committee report and re-refer the bill to Finance. Is that correct, Council?
Mr. Chairman and members, I think what I'd recommend doing is to amend the committee report to read that the bill do pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance and then adopt the committee report.
Senator Scoy's motion as recited by Council. Any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. Senator Sharon, thank you. Your bill is now on its way to Finance.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
It won't be there until we have another floor session and adopt the committee report from the Rules Committee, but we'll be there on Monday afternoon. Senator Sieben, would you chair while I present a bill?
Senator Bach, Senate File 4, proposed change to constitutional amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Just a little bit of history for the Rules Committee, but I have a technical amendment that we need to put on, and it's technical in nature. It puts an effective date and inserts some language into a second place in the bill to make it clear. But it's purely technical in nature and adds an effective date. So I'd move the A4 amendment.
All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The A4 is adopted. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, I had staff in your packet include this House research report that was done on the history of constitutional amendments. It's actually very interesting when you look through it. It's got all of the previous amendments, a little history of them that have been proposed to the people of the state of Minnesota. This idea actually came to me after 2008. There was an amendment that had been around for a while, started with Senator Lessard years before on a constitutional amendment originally intended for game and fish. It was amended along the way over the years. It finally ended up in front of the Senate Tax Committee in 2007, and it dedicated 0.3% of our sales tax to conservation purposes and funding for the cultural and arts, parks and trails and other things. It came to the Senate Tax Committee. The Tax Committee had a lot of concern about putting tax increases into the Constitution. So the Tax Committee actually amended the bill to a statutory tax increase. Later, that bill was amended back to be a constitutional amendment, ended up passing both the House and the Senate, and went to the ballot in 2008. I remained having some concern about I started to research a little bit. Well, gee, how hard are constitutional amendments to pass? Because I think there's a perception around the Capitol among members that constitutional amendments are very hard to pass by the voters. because we require that supermajority of 50% plus one of all the people who voted in the election, not just the people who voted on the ballot question. So we have a little higher threshold to pass them. The amendment ended up passing, and I started to look at kind of that perception around here that amendments are hard to pass. And what I learned is that prior to 2010, when I originally introduced this bill and passed it out of the State and Local Government Committee to Rules, and the majority at the time decided not to move it to the floor, but what I learned in my research on this subject is prior to 2010, there had been 18 amendments proposed to the Constitution from the period of 1982 to 2010. There have been 18 amendments proposed, 17 of them passed. So I think it's it dispels that myth that constitutional amendments are difficult to pass. And so I felt that, well, gee, if it certainly 2012 maybe what was an exception or an anomaly or whatever it was, but I felt at the time in 2010, and I still feel today, that amending the Constitution is very, very serious business, and giving people an opportunity to vote on it is very, very serious business. And oftentimes, the voters only hear one side of the story, and only one side of the campaign is funded. That's very common. So I felt like it seems like we ought to do something to make sure we have bipartisan support at the legislature for proposing constitutional amendments. And that is kind of the history of where this bill came from in 2010 when I introduced it. So this bill does set a higher threshold to get an amendment past the legislature onto the ballot. It requires a 60% vote of both bodies, the House and the Senate. And, you know, that doesn't guarantee that something is going to be bipartisan, but I think it's kind of rare occasions where both bodies, one party has 60%. Anyway, it requires a 60% majority in both bodies. It requires that that the two legislative bodies act in different years, but of the same legislature, bodies of the same legislature, and it requires an intervening election before it can go to the ballot. So the point of that is to actually give a subsequent legislature potentially has an opportunity to potentially repeal the provision. So it sets a pretty high threshold, I would argue, by putting not only a supermajority but some time between something getting on the ballot. A lot of states have provisions like that that require intervening elections. A lot of states have supermajorities. You'll see a great history of what other states have in this report that House Research did. So that is what it is in front of you. I don't know the path for this. My hope is that this committee in a bipartisan way will send it up to the floor. I don't know if we'll take it up. I don't know if the House is interested in any constitutional amendments or not. But I think we all agree that amending the Constitution is really, really serious business. I don't know how voters will feel about it if we do make a decision to put it on the ballot. I can tell you I'm very pleased that two members of the Minority Caucus came to me and asked to author the bill with me. Both Senator Housley and Senator Brandon Peterson are co-authors on the bill with me. I'm very pleased about that. I deliberately didn't go looking for five authors, hoping that we could find bipartisan support for this, and I do hope that we'll find that same kind of bipartisan support on the floor for it. So, Madam Chair, that kind of concludes my comments on the bill.
Senator Bach, I noticed that on lines 2.9 and 2.10, the title for the question that would be submitted is just amending the Minnesota Constitution. Why not? Obviously, we remember from the last constitutional amendment debate in the state that the Secretary of State chose the titles for the question at hand, and ultimately a judge, well, whatever happened with that. So, but my question is, why not be a little bit more descriptive here and say something about what you're proposing to do in the title?
Well, in some cases, the legislature has actually propose the title. In other cases, if absent that, the Secretary of State does it. I would argue that this is a good government constitutional amendment that we're proposing, and I guess I trust that our Secretary of State will write a title that that reflects that. I don't have strong feelings either way whether the legislature writes the title or not.
Well, Senator Bach, I think that you are writing the title, if I read this correct. Is that right, counsel? The title would be amending the Minnesota Constitution. So my question is, why not make that a little more descriptive?
I'd have to defer to counsel, but.
Madam Chair and Senator Bach, you'll see the reference there to 204D15, which is the statute that provides the instruction to the Secretary of State. It's worth noting that that statute tells the Secretary of State that the title shall consist of not more than one printed line above the question to which it refers. So the title itself is very brief. The question is a little lengthier. I think the goal behind the title is usually just to convey the subject matter and not necessarily exactly what the amendment would do.
So, counsel, if I'm understanding this right, the Secretary of State would still write the title. It would not just be amending the Minnesota Constitution as the title.
Madam Chair, the way the bill is currently drafted, this would remove that authority from the Secretary of State and take care of this. This provision would supply the title for the amendment.
I got it. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Bach, you're right. This is not a Republican-Democrat issue, but I want to at least talk about some of the things I'm concerned about. I know our framers of the Constitution were thoughtful, tried to lay out positions that divided the power into the three judicial, executive, and legislative branch. And I think they put this here for a purpose, and here's the part that I think is important the way we have it. I feel like this is the people's voice, where they have a chance when things aren't going through either because of positions that we take politically or feel like we have to take, and maybe sometimes we want something to happen and we sense that the people want it to happen, and that's usually the trigger for this. And I look back, too, a few years ago, and we averaged roughly one a year through our inception, of constitutional amendments. And, so it's not, I don't think we're, overusing it, but it is that opportunity when there is maybe a direction or something happening and for some reason we just can't come together on it. And the second part of that, I think, is, and I'm trying to look back all the way to the beginning and not just the last few years, is there may be times that a governor is just not where the legislative branches are, and the legislative branches are with the people, and this is that opportunity to prove that, and so I'm hesitant to go above that. I do appreciate the idea of the bipartisan part. I do appreciate that. But to me, it takes away from the people's voice, and that's why I'm concerned about it.
Well,
Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, Senator Gazelka, I don't think this takes anything away from the people. I think this actually restricts some of the power of the legislature. That's how I view it, is the legislature is giving up some authority here by requiring a supermajority.
Madam Chair, one follow-up on that. I agree with that, and I'm concerned about that, because then it actually shifts it a little bit more away from the legislative branch and in some ways towards the governor. Branch and so, or executive branch, and and if that's the direction we decide to go, that's fine. But that's where I feel like we're giving that up.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Gazelka, we don't propose any changes relative to the governor. The legislature still retains full authority to put this on the ballot. It's not a bill that's signed by the governor, so it really doesn't make any change. I mean, right now the legislature proposes an amendment, passes a bill, it goes to the ballot. This does not change that. So, that chain of power directly from the legislature to the voters remains the same, and the governor is outside of that, and I'm not proposing to change that. And I believe that is the right path, that the legislature, the representatives of the people, should have the authority to send something directly to the ballot regardless of who the governor is, and this doesn't contemplate any change in that area.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, on that point, I think I share Senator Bach's comment on it, and Senator Gazelka, the one thing I'd say different is I think the Constitution is supposed to be the stable part of the government, the most stable portion, and not I mean, there was a proposal a number of years ago to amend the Constitution to allow initiative and referendum, and I think people are often thinking, oh, the constitutional process is we're supposed to, if you want initiative and referendum, I don't think the way to do it is to throw out constitutional amendments and consider that the initiative or the referendum kind of idea. I actually have long thought we should make it more difficult to amend it. I guess this is one that I don't have an answer to, but I just wanted to hear your response to, and that is how difficult should it be? I think it was the way it is now. I agree with you. It's not sufficient. I kind of thought the 60% in both houses was. You're doing 60% and you're doing separate years. I understand that can slow down heat of the moment things, so I think that's appropriate. So I'm not sure what the mix is. I guess I'm just asking. I don't think we want to make it so you can never amend the Constitution. I also think you don't want it to be something, the whim of the day kind of thing. And I'm just curious how you came up with the 60% and the every other year. Were you thinking stronger than that would be better, or weaker than that? How'd you come up with that?
Senator Bach.
Well, I think the every other year thing is a point of it needs to be the same legislature. So the House would act in 1 year, the Senate would act in 1 year, but bodies of the same legislative session. The intervening election, a number of states have that before it actually goes to the ballot. Doesn't provide an opportunity for it to be pulled back unless the legislature for some reason decides, the subsequent legislature decides it should be pulled back. But I think it just provides a little more time for the public, I think a little more time for legislators to talk about the proposed amendment to the Constitution over the term of the intervening election. I'm not totally wed to that idea. I don't think it's critically important to the bill. It just provides some additional time for the public, I think, to have a conversation about that question that's going to be on the ballot, that the legislature has decided is going to be on the ballot.
Senator Marty.
On that one other question, I mean, I'm just trying to figure out in my own mind if this 60%, and I like the every other year in the same time, so you don't have to wait 3 or 4 years to do it, but you could do it, at least if there's really a passionate moment in public opinion or legislative opinion, at least you have a year between those two. But I'm wondering, you didn't propose any change in the ratification vote, which is not 50%. Of those voting on the question, but 50% of those voting. I wondered, I mean, the U.S. Constitution, the ratification is more difficult. I'm wondering, did you give any consideration to that?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Marty, Senator Cohen certainly did. Senator Cohen has Senate file number 6 that actually would have required a 2/3 vote of the legislature in each body. When that bill was in front of Senator Pappas's committee and Senator, and was passed to this committee also, Senate File 6 is also here, the State and Local Government Committee made a decision to amend Senator Cohen's bill from 2/3 down to 60%. So, and they had an extensive conversation about that. Senator Thompson had some pretty strong feelings about maybe 2/3 is just too high a threshold to have at the legislature. But we didn't contemplate the idea of raising the threshold of the actual ballot question, but we did have a conversation about should it be 60% or 67% of the members of the legislature, and maybe Senator Cohen can speak to that.
Senator Cohen.
Well, Madam Chair and members, Senator Box corrected. He and I had talked about raising the threshold for the constitutional amendment. I haven't been around here for a while. I mean, most of the amendments, not all, but almost all the amendments have passed the legislature with a significant majority vote. The legacy amendment, which had some negative votes from both caucuses, had significant support from both caucuses and had a 2/3 majority off the Senate floor. Other amendments more recently have usually been close to 100% of the Senate. I looked at the 2/3 number, and Senator Marty, relative to your question that Senator Bach pointed out, simply because that's the threshold used in the United States Constitution. And if you look at some of the debates from the Constitutional Convention in 1787, you'll find discussion of the difficulty that it should take to amend the Constitution. And I don't want to get into too long of a history, but members will recall that in the aftermath of the passage of the convention's document, there was concern about the lack of a Bill of Rights or something similar to that. But that was fairly well unanimously agreed to. There wasn't a lot of discussion about that during the convention. But during the convention, it was very clear. We talk about the founding fathers and all that kind of stuff. It was very clear that the people at the convention felt that there should be an extremely high threshold for amending the Constitution. That's why I figured, if it's good enough for Madison and Hamilton and the gang in Philadelphia in 1787, it's good enough for us. It was clear in Senator Pappas's committee that there was fairly unanimous support that that was too high of a threshold. And so my bill was amended to reflect the same thing as Senator Bach's bill. Senator Bach's bill is the 60% bill, so we're going with that bill. But I can make a strong argument for doing it at a higher level. And it absolutely mirrors the debates that took place in 1787.
Madam Chair.
Senator Newman. Sorry. And then
thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Bach, that's the first time I've read your bill was just this morning. And the idea of the matter not going on the ballot until the next general election looks like kind of an unusual idea to me, and I'd just like to hear what your thoughts are on that, because it would appear to me that we would have the ability to pass the bill, or a constitutional amendment, I should say, and then we wait until the next general election, but the legislature would then, in the meantime, be meeting. And I'm wondering if you have given any thought to the type of mischief that might intervene with either amending or repealing the constitutional amendment that is supposed to go on the ballot in the following election.
Senator,
just your thoughts, Senator.
I think that is an additional hurdle that I'm not necessarily wed to. I mean, constitutional amendments are the jurisdiction of this committee. And if people really have an issue with that intervening election, I don't have a problem with taking that out. I just think that if the next legislature that comes in wants to have a conversation about it and reconsider it, they can. I think that adds to the debate about the question that the public helps get the public engaged in what they're going to be voting on at the next election. I think it just adds to the conversation that the public's going to have on the question. But if people think that is just too much of a hurdle, I'm not necessarily wed to that position, but other states do have it.
Senator Newman.
Just one quick follow-up question. With those thoughts in mind, Senator Bach, where you're just adding to potentially to the discussion, then why would you have the proposed constitutional amendment debated and passed by the House and the Senate in different years, albeit the same session?
Senator Bach.
Madam President, that's probably not necessary. It just extends the period of time where the conversation is going to happen around the Capitol so that that it's not a conversation just in one year. It's actually a conversation in two different years, and the press has an opportunity to cover it. There's really no reason to have to do that. Just kind of adds to the conversation as you finally build up to a date when the voters are going to vote on it. I don't believe that's a difficult thing for the legislature to do. If it generally requires a bipartisan vote, I don't think it really matters if we pass it in separate years of the biennium. I think it just extends the public conversation some, which I think is probably helpful.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My first comment, I listened carefully to the historical lesson that Senator Cohen gave us regarding the two-thirds, and that applied to a federal model. But, some historians might think that that might have been more of a self-preservation of the elite landed gentry that were members of Congress at that time, and that they didn't want anyone messing around with their policies that were in federal law. So I'm not quite sure we have that same system of governing anymore to compare early federal models with what we have now. But the other question I had for Senator Bach was, I think back on the discussion around the marriage amendment. The marriage amendment, one of the reasons why a marriage amendment was timely was that there were a few court challenges that were regarding the marriage law in the state of Minnesota. That was one of the motivations that was recognized, that those cases were before the appellate court. And some members didn't want the definition of marriage to be altered by the courts, but rather it should be something that would be more directly reflective of the public. We had the definition already recognized by the public's representatives here in the legislature from years back. But because of the timeliness that was necessary, the timing of the marriage amendment was to recognize, or at least get the public to give us direction. How should we define marriage in light of other laws that would be affected by it? And it was kind of sped up and hastened because of those court cases. Once that constitutional amendment was decided on by the legislature, the court stepped back. They did not pursue the court case until after the referendum was decided. And so in that particular case, there was a time of essence that was necessary for that particular referendum to be offered to the public. And even at that, we purposely made the decision to offer it to the legislature nearly a year and a half before the decision was given to the public, because we wanted to have a thoughtful and long discussion. And being a proponent of that legislation, I didn't want to be ever accused of rushing such an important issue within 6 months to the public. And so there are times when time is of essence, and waiting for a subsequent election would take place may get complicated in the event that an issue might be before the courts. Have you considered any of that in the timeliness of offering the once the referendum would hit a ballot?
Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, certainly if the court had ruled on striking down a Minnesota statute, if my position kind of is if the 60% majority of the legislature then decided they didn't like the opinion of the court, they certainly could have proposed an amendment to the Constitution that, if passed, would have superseded the court's ruling. So, I mean, it could have happened. It would have taken a longer period of time. The court likely would have ruled, maybe. But the legislature always has the authority to respond to the court's decisions, and I don't think this changes it any. It probably just puts a little bit more time in, but I'm not sure that it's right to rush a constitutional amendment for the purpose of preempting a court ruling either. I'm not sure that that's that important, that we're afraid the court's going to do something, so we got to rush an amendment to the ballot to preempt the courts. I'm not sure that's the right argument for being able in a timely way to get something on the ballot.
Well, Madam Chair,
Senator Limmer,
I would agree if that was the sole reason why one would want to offer any constitutional amendment to preempt something. But some issues, it might be the best just to get a direct guidance from the public themselves, and not necessarily to preempt anything, but simply give us direction as we make policy. And sometimes timing issues may come up where more of an urgency might be required. And so that's why I'm questioning why we need to have that longer wait. We're already debating it in one chamber 1 year, and then waiting an entire year for another chamber to recognize the same proposal, and then to wait even longer. There's some of us that might just be retired from the legislature before anything like that would happen. And so I just think that it's too long of a process.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Lauren, I'm certainly willing to have that conversation, whether we want to have it today or we want to consider that debate on the floor. I'm not I really don't have strong feelings about it, whether we have an intervening election or not. I just think it kind of adds to more time for the public to digest what we're doing. That's the only reason it's in there, but I don't think it's critical to the bill.
Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Senator Bach, in the spirit of your law, of your bill, then would you want to change the date on this particular bill to on line 22 to instead of 2014 to put it at 2016, making sure that everyone would have ample time to discuss it and get ramped up on it, just as what you want to do in the future?
Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, I don't believe that's critical to this bill.
So it's not critical here, but critical on every other referendum we consider in the future, that we don't even know what the subject is.
That's a good catch.
Just wondering.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess your question has prompted me to, would we, if we take this bill up on the floor and we don't get three-fifths of the members to support this bill, would the author continue to allow it to go forward, or would he set it aside?
Well, the same question, Madam Chair, Senator Hand, was offered in the State and Local Government Committee, and the fact that I have two Republican authors on the bill, I think, is helpful in assuring we're going to have bipartisan support, and I really would hope that this isn't somehow a partisan measure. I don't believe it's going to be. I'd be pretty surprised if it turned out that way.
Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, I was looking over the historical official status of the bill on the front page up high by the Senate file number, and I don't see it going, this particular bill, going to the election committee. And I was just wondering, why are we bypassing the election committee on this before, or at least not before, the rules committee?
Senator
Certainly
Limmer,
is an election issue.
Senator Limmer, I think that this didn't come to the election subcommittee because it's a constitutional amendment. Although the committee has heard other constitutional amendment-related issues, for instance, the judicial election bill that we heard yesterday, that more directly relates to actual elections for judges in that case. And so as a general rule, though, the elections committee does not hear all constitutional amendment bills. Is there any other discussion on Senate File 4? Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify either in support or opposition to Senate File 4? With that, Senator Bach moves that Senate File 4.
That's not very controversial.
No. As amended.
As amended, be recommended to pass and move to the floor. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion passes.
Thank you, Madam Chair of the Committee.
One of the members of the, I'm not a member of the Landed Gentry, so I feel okay about supporting this. I guess it's the elite Landed Gentry. I'm not a member of the elite Landed Gentry. So
just the Landed
Gentry? Just the Landed
Gentry. Or just the elite?
No, just the Landed Gentry. I do own some land. Very small. Not very, you know.
For the next one.
If you own two parcels of land, you get two votes.
Is that?
Senator Hoffman, welcome to the Senate Rules Committee. Have you ever been in front of this committee before?
Mr. Chair, I have not been in front of this committee. This is the first time in front of this committee, although I am aware of the rich tradition and history of this committee, and so it's an honor to be here in front of such distinguished people.
Chairman, were you aware, Senator, when I was a former House member, former Representative Munger, now deceased, had a rule that the first time he ever brought a bill to his committee, you had to bring donuts for the committee members. Senator Limmer and other House members probably remember that, so maybe the Rules Committee could have a little conversation about setting a precedent in the Senate similar to what Representative Munger had.
Chairman, I think Representative Munger preferred sprinkles, too, on his donuts. To be noted.
Senator Limmer, that's accurate. He preferred donuts with sprinkles on it, and everybody that was a member of the House knew that and tried to be sensitive to that.
Everyone ate sprinkles.
Mr. Chairman, we're trying to model a more healthy lifestyle, though, here. So
bagels.
You have to bring in, no, not bagels. No. To bring in, like, apples bagels. And bananas.
Former Representative Munger lived well into his 80s. So I think if I can make it to his age of tenure, I think I'll stay with the sprinkles. Senator, members, we need to adopt the subcommittee report on Senate File 1732 in order to get it in front of us. Senator Skoy makes that motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. Senator Hoffman, what are we doing?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 2401, known by many as the Eric Bill.
We adopted the subcommittee report on Senate File 1732.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, but this is my first time in front of your committee, and I did not bring the sprinkles, so I apologize for any inconvenience that this freshman has given.
Bring Senate File 1732?
Mr. Chair, I have it right in front of me.
Perfect. Let's proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for hearing Senate File 1732. This is a real simple fix. It simply extends the deadline to purchase voting equipment with Help America Vote Act grants from March 31st, 2014 to March 31st, 2016. And I'll be real quick. Currently, money appropriated under the Help America Vote Act is not used by the counties, and it must be returned to the Secretary of State. However, this bill extends that period by 2 years when we know better equipment and technology is expected to be available. If we force counties to spend this money now, they will be purchasing outdated equipment and using technology that is forever changing. This is all about more efficient and effective use of Help America voter funds, which are taxpayer money. The Secretary of State supports this bill, and there are representatives here not only from the Secretary of State's office but also from counties to support if you would like to hear from them. The money has already been appropriated, so there is no new fiscal note, and this will actually save the state money. Thank you, and I sit here happy to answer any questions.
Senator Sieben, how did the conversation on this bill go in the Elections Subcommittee?
Mr. Chair, it was pretty non-controversial. I don't think there are really any concerns raised.
Do members want to hear from the Secretary of State's office?
No.
Necessary? Any of the members want to hear from any testimony?
Mr. Chair, your bill took so long. Let's just...
Senator Sieben moves Senate File 1732 be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Contrary, no. The motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Senator Hoffman, we have Senate File 2401. Senator Sieben moves adoption of, adoption of the subcommittee report. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. The subcommittee report is adopted. Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 2401, also known as the ERIC Bill, which is the Electronic Registration Information Center. With me at the table is Beth Frazier, who is the Deputy Secretary of State. As you know, we have a great voting system in Minnesota, but we also know that it can be improved and made more efficient, saving time and money. In order to increase both the efficiency and the integrity of our elections, this bill would allow Minnesota to participate in a data-sharing program that is controlled and governed by those states and those choose to participate in it. I'm just going to give you a little background. In 2012, a consortium of states consisting of both Democratic and Republican secretaries of state created the ERIC, which is the Electronic Registration Information Center. It was created because states recognized that the data on America's voter rolls contains significant amounts of out-of-date and inaccurate information. And as a result of these issues, these states created ERIC with the sole mission of assisting in improving the integrity of America's voter rolls and increasing access to voter registration for all eligible citizens. Now, we live in a mobile society, and we know that it takes a concerted effort among the states to ensure that our voter rolls are accurate. Using the ERIC Data Center would allow Minnesota to safely and securely compare the voted data against Minnesota's own DVS data, the Social Security Death Index, which you know is an issue, We have lots of folks, and Beth can sure talk about that. And against other state voters and DMV data, in addition to the laudable goals of ERIC, I'm going to give you some specifics of why Minnesota should participate. Currently, Minnesota cannot use the Social Security Death Index to identify deceased voters on our voter rolls because the Social Security Administration no longer provides last state of residence in the data. ERIC would allow Minnesota to remove those deceased voters from the rolls. Having decreased voters appear on the rolls is not only inaccurate but decreases voter confidence when they see somebody on the rolls that they know has died. And no, it's not a Chicago thing, but even though Cook County and Illinois are the next states to really pick this up. Currently, despite county officials, Minnesota voter rolls do contain duplicates, and ERIC allows Minnesota to identify these duplicates and remove them from the list. This increases the accuracy and the voter confidence. Currently, 70% of Minnesotans who use same-day registration at polls on Election Day use a current valid driver's license. ERIC would allow us to reduce this number by identifying voters that need to update their registration prior to Election Day. We know that same-day registration provides an important service to voters, but it also increases the time spent by all voters at polls and the time spent by counties processing data after Election Day. Finally, Minnesota, as otherwise eligible voters are not registered and wait until Election Day to register. ERIC allows us to identify those potentially eligible voters and provide information to them on how to register. This bill before us would permit Minnesota to address all of those issues listed, and it would allow Minnesota to join both the conservative and liberal states that are already using the ERIC technology to ensure accuracy and integrity voting rolls and to provide outreach to the eligible and unregistered voters. With that, I turn this over to Beth Fraser for brief comments, and then we can stand for questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Fraser, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Beth Fraser, I'm the Deputy Secretary of State, and we are fully supportive of this bill. We think it would really help modernize Minnesota's election system, and I'm happy to answer any questions. I just want to note that Mr. McGrath from Minnesota Majority also testified in favor of the bill in the subcommittee.
Thank you, Ms. Fraser.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, I'm in agreement about accurate voting rolls. I guess my concern is, can you assure us that we're not going to lose the data? I mean, Minsure, we have a big case of that. That's my big beef. I mean, we have to protect the data, and can you assure me that we're not going to have the same problems?
Mr. Chair and Senator Gazelka, at the subcommittee, we had the executive director of this organization, of ERIC, who explained how the data is anonymized before it leaves the state's control and into a string of numbers that is indecipherable and then is anonymized again before it's returned to the state. And so they also had an analysis done by an outside organization that looks at data security, and they said that this organization is doing everything possible to protect the data. So it is highly secure, and we do have confidence in the security measures they're taking.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Hoffman. And I would be the first to admit I haven't served on the Elections Committee, so perhaps this was already discussed. But what I'm wondering is that the driver's license data that is being presumed to be used as a check against the voter registration, is that correct?
Ms. Fraser?
Mr. Chair and Senator Hand, the way that ERIC works is that both the voter registration data and the driver's license data are uploaded and compared to each other as well as to other states' data as well as other data sets like the Social Security Administration. And so having the driver's license data will allow us, for example, to use the Social Security information, which we cannot use currently, to identify people who have died. So for most registered voters, we have a driver's license number but do not have the last four digits of their Social Security number. And so if we get information from the Social Security Administration that says that Bill Smith, with a certain date of birth, somewhere in the United States died, that does not give us enough confidence that Bill Smith in Candy, Ojai County is the right Bill Smith. Whereas if we have the driver's license record and the voter registration record, and we know that this is the same person, and the driver's license record contains the last four digits of the Social Security number, and then we're able to compare that to the death information, which also includes the last four digits of the Social Security number, then we have confidence that it is talking about the same individual, and we can mark the voter record as deceased and remove them from the voter rolls. It also, comparing the two lists, will allow us to identify people who have updated their driver's license but not updated their voter registration when they've moved, which will allow us to significantly decrease the number of people that wait until Election Day to update their voter registration, which will mean that the rolls are more updated ahead of time, which is better for voters because it means they need to spend less time in the polling place. We may need fewer election judges. It will mean less data entry for county election officials after the fact, and will provide better lists to those campaigning.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate your answer. The thing that occurs to me, and again, I claim no expertise, but it seems to me that driver's license, obtaining a driver's license and the information on the driver's license, I don't look at that as a highly secure system. I remember in the past years having lots of debates about sort of a cottage industry of producing fraudulent driver's licenses for various purposes. I think it's very common for people to move and not change their driver's license information because it's hardly ever needed to do that, I guess, until you absolutely have to have it. So I guess I'm just wondering if you've got a system that has very broad access, there's no requirement to be a citizen to get a driver's license, there's just, you've got that system, if you're saying that's going to be the thing that we're going to go to with our voter registration to validate that, it seems to me if you want to validate voters, why don't we just have them come with a photo ID at the poll?
Mr. Chair and Senator Han, if you're concerned about false driver's licenses, it seems like you would be more concerned about people showing up with a false document than false information being in the state system. So that's, I guess, one response. But, I mean, under the Federal Help America Vote Act, the state has been validating voter information against driver's license information and Social Security information since 2004. So we are using that as a check. And we know that 70% of people that do same-day registration come in with an updated driver's license. So people are updating their driver's licenses when they move before they update their voter registrations, and it could help update the voter rolls.
Mr. Chair, if I may, there's a letter from Scott Gessler, who's the Colorado Secretary of State, and he's also running for governor in Colorado. But if you look at the second paragraph, he talked about the matching process that identified 29,986 duplicate registrants within these states. So just those 10 states that are out there, the system was able to identify the duplicates, then was able to validate these users as voters or non-voters. So and if you know Scott Gessler, you know that he wouldn't be matching, you know, the been around for a while and understands this process. So just wanted to point that out.
Senator Hand, anything further?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not at this time.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, just an observation from the Subcommittee on Elections on this bill is we shouldn't be surprised when we hear the proponents of the bill come in and talk about data security. And to Senator Gazelka's point, that is one of my primary concerns on this, is that in Minnesota, we've had a little bit of trouble in the last year or so regarding data privacy, stretching across a number of different agencies. And now we have got a guy that comes in from outside of the state of Minnesota and is going to sell us on this bill, and we have our own Secretary of State adding that no question the data is going to be secure. And I guess my point is that just because we receive assurances that our data is secured, at least in terms of the track record for the state of Minnesota in the last year, it ain't necessarily so. Now what we're going to begin doing is sharing data across state lines.
Thanks.
And it's for that reason I voted against the bill yesterday. I will vote against it today, is that I'm simply not satisfied that what I am being told is, in fact, accurate and true. And I'm basing it more on the track record for the state of Minnesota in the last year or so than I am upon any kind of criticism that is coming from testifiers or from Senator Hoffman.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have the same concern. I'm on the election subcommittee. I'm also on judiciary. I can't remember this bill going to the judiciary regarding the data privacy issue, where that would be a primary jurisdiction. If I can bring your attention to lines 3.6 and 7, the question that I have is in the language where it starts in the middle of line 6, the Secretary of State, this means of another state, must maintain the same data classification that the data had while it was in the possession of the state providing the data. Now, that's a good intention. It doesn't state that the outside Secretary of State is agreeing to a condition that it maintain that. It just says it must maintain. I don't know if that's the same thing. I guess I would find a little more comfort in saying it would agree to maintain that data. But the other question I think that Senator Newman raised is a good one, and we know very well that once data that's classified in as a private or a confidential classification in the state of Minnesota, once we share that data across our border lines, there's no way you can enforce our law in another state. So there is an issue here that Senator Newman brings up that is real. And we have this discussion in Judiciary Committee all the time about when we transfer data over. And as Senator Newman stated, we recently don't have a really good record of protecting our own data, and I don't even know what other states' measures are to protect data that we would give them. So I'm just a little – I would like to have a little more comfort in this if I could.
I think Senator Limmer, you raise a good point. I think Senator Hoppen, our intent is to send this bill to transportation. I do think I would strongly encourage Senator Dibble and Senator Latz to have a conversation about data privacy. I guess I'd be a little surprised if Senator Latz didn't want to see the bill, but our intent is to get it to transportation first. But I would encourage you – I don't want to have this conversation on the floor of the Senate about the fact that judiciary maybe should have took a look at it. So we need to make sure that Senator Latz is comfortable if the decision is made he's not going to see the bill.
Mr. Chair, I believe that the expectation is that it will go to both committees and is going to transportation first, just to get that out of the way. But it will be in judiciary and has been heard in civil law in the other body. The other piece I want to note about private information is that that information is anonymized before it's turned over to the other state. So only the computer can actually read that information. And then the states receive a report back that basically tells us that the information has been validated or there's a strong match, but we don't actually receive the information. So for example, they could if we say we only want to know about strong matches where there is a match on the last four digits of the Social Security number from the driver's license record and a full date of birth, we don't actually need to receive the driver's license number or the full date of birth in order to know that there's a match on those items. And so we're not even necessarily receiving the private information, and other states aren't necessarily receiving our private information, just a validation that there is a match.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I would ask that you take Ms. Frazier's latest comments and keep in mind that, just for example, the Target Corporation problem that they are having, whoever it is that the Target Corporation hired to manage their data privacy undoubtedly was assured there's not a problem. And the longer that particular fiasco goes on, the more problems that are surfacing, and so I'm not being critical of Ms. Frazier. I'm just saying I don't know whether or not what she is relating to us is completely accurate. If you can build the system, I think you can hack the system.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sieben.
If Senator Hoffman or Ms. Frazier could remind me of the National Commission that recommended that this system be put in place. I think that might be helpful to the committee to talk about the bipartisan nature of the federal commission that recommended this system. Also, I think it's worth noting for the other members of the committee that someone who doesn't always necessarily agree with me on all issues related to elections, Dan McGrath from Minnesota Majority testified in support of the bill in the subcommittee, explaining that, in his opinion, that this would increase voter the integrity of the system because it would make matches in many of the ways that Senator Hoffman explained. So if you could, again, just give a brief, not a description, but just a brief overview of the National Commission on Election, whatever that was, I think that might be helpful.
Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben, the Presidential Commission on Elections suggested, highly recommended to states to join interchanges like ERIC. They specifically mentioned this data exchange. And that commission was chaired by Bob Bauer, who was the attorney for President Obama, and Ginsburg, who was the attorney for Romney. And they agreed that this was an appropriate and good use of state resources in a way to help modernize our system and to clean up voter lists.
And did you want to talk about the analyzer too?
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Hoffman, are the only states that currently use the system Colorado, Delaware, Nevada, Utah, Virginia, and Washington? Are those the states that we would be sharing information with?
Mr. Chair and Senator Stump, those are the states that belong to the consortium right now, and it is under my understanding that Illinois is going to be pretty close. They've already gone through one hurdle to become members of that, and then that brings the cost down. And just let me add one more thing. IBM are the folks that helped create this database, and the security components is over 180 alphanumeric things that identify. So you might get upper class, you know, lowercase, uppercase, but it's 180 alphanumerics that end up identifying who an individual is. And the way IBM had set it up, it's a pretty secure system. So, but the answer to your question, Senator Stump, is yeah, right now that's who makes up the consortium of states.
Mr. Chair and Senator Stump, they are actively recruiting new members, and my understanding is that in addition to Illinois, Iowa, Arizona, Florida, several other states, Ohio, are looking at joining.
Yep. Any other discussion?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, I believe that this bill doesn't necessarily just limit itself to sharing data confirmed through the Secretary of State having access to driver license information, but it's also allowing, as it says in lines 2.35, Secretary of State can enter into an agreement with an organization governed exclusively by a group of states. I'm not sure if we have that joint power agreement established yet by states, but whether it is or not, I don't know who or what that organization that would be governed exclusively by a group of states, who that would be. And perhaps the Secretary of State's office could shed light on that. I don't think we covered that question in the committee.
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, the group of states is ERIC, is the Electronic Registration Information Center.
Any other discussion? Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to go back to Senator Stump's question and then just for clarification. So if we do this, then those, 9 other states in Minnesota would be in this organization, and we would share these data among ourselves, but not from Wisconsin or the Dakotas or Iowa or Missouri, Nebraska. I mean, is that correct that we'd have this ability to do this, but only with the group of 9 states that have agreed? Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Senator Hand, the data is shared among the states that have joined ERIC. Mm-hmm. There are currently 9 states. That is expected to grow as time goes on, and that ultimately there's a hope that all 50 states and some territories will be part of ERIC. I actually think that the biggest benefit for Minnesota is not sharing with other states, but is using their technology to compare the driver's license list to the voter registration list and to use the Social Security death information.
And Mr. Chairman, and my question is the usefulness of that, if this idea has merit, it probably would be best to have all states agree, and maybe there ought to be an amendment to this language that would make implementation conditional upon having all states or some number of states or neighboring states. I have to think that this information might be helpful when you're talking about states around Minnesota, people moving back and forth and using that as a validation of voter registration. But just to pick out nine states at random and say, well, we're going to check against those nine state records and that's going to make our system much, much better, I'm not sure if I'm in agreement with that. Maybe if you got everybody to do it, but maybe the implementation ought to be conditional upon that happening.
Other discussion? Anybody in the audience want to testify for or against the bill?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Scott.
I just want to be clear. This is going to transportation, right, and Senator Dibble and Senator Latz are going to have a conversation about this data practices issue.
That would be my suggestion to Senator Hoffman, yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, we fully expect this to go to transportation and also to judiciary. So I think it will have several additional stops.
Senator Sieben moves that Senate File 2401 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Transportation. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no?
No.
Motion prevails. Senator Sieben, Senate File 2288. Senator Sieben moves adoption of the subcommittee report from elections. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Senator Bach and members of the committee. This bill that's before us is the online voting registration system, which would allow the Secretary of State's office to implement the system or to continue to operate the system they have in place and operate it securely now and into the future. The language that's before you has changed from what was first proposed. I offered an amendment in the subcommittee that was a product of conversations that had taken place in the other body among interested parties. The language that's before us now is more prescriptive and lays out more requirements around security and checks on the system. I also accepted an amendment in the subcommittee from Senator Kiffmeyer that added additional security requirements. And that brings me to discuss the A7 amendment, which is in your packets. The A7 amendment takes out some of the language that Senator Kiffmeyer proposed in the amendment that she adopted. And I can go through and explain to you why we're doing this. So if you look...
Senator Sieben, let's get the amendment in front of us, I guess. Senator Sieben moves the A7 amendment to the committee engrossment, CE2. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the as you'll see on lines 1.3 and 1.4 of the amendment, it would delete the requirement that says, or the language that says, the Secretary of State must work with the Chief Information Officer or another security expert to annually audit the security of the system. And we're deleting this not because we don't want this to happen, but because the sentence right before it relates to how the Secretary of State must provide ongoing testing and monitoring to ensure the continued security. So we felt that that was not only redundant, but also not clear in terms of who would perform the audit. The Secretary of State's office just expressed some concern that they were already going to make sure they were monitoring the security. The audit was perhaps unnecessary and not clear. And then the other language has much of the same explanation, where it's, again, not that we didn't want to provide. There will be ongoing monitoring and testing to ensure the continued security of the system, but some of the language would just seem to be a little bit too redundant and unclear. So with that, I'm happy to answer questions on that amendment.
On the amendment, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the amendment, members, I would oppose the amendment being offered by Senator Sieben. In the Elections Committee, this is something that was discussed, and if we adopt the recommendation of the Secretary of State, which is essentially this amendment, the way I read this, the Secretary of State could in-house do their own audit and do their own testing and their own monitoring, whereas as the bill now reads, the Secretary of State has to work with somebody outside of the Secretary of State's office, either the Chief Information Officer or a completely different outside security expert. And to my way of thinking, that is the very kind of thing that we should be worried about, so that we do not place all of the responsibility in the hands of the Secretary of State's office to monitor and test this system. So for the very reason why the Secretary of State wants this amendment adopted, I oppose it.
Any other discussion on the A7 amendment? Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Senator Newman. I'm concerned. I think that the current Secretary of State has shown a propensity to act on his own without, frankly, much regard for what the legislature has written as law and policy, and I have a concern about saying that the Secretary of State can decide what to do and then decide whether he's doing it right, and there ought to be no check on that. I think that the amendment that the policy committee adopted should not be undone by this committee.
Senator Skoyter, do you have something?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben, I guess I was just looking at some of the language on page 2, line 30 and 34. So on page 2, line 30 and 31, where the Secretary of State must provide ongoing testing and monitoring, your assumption is that that is enough to not require this redundant language in line 31 through 34. Am I reading that correct, Senator Sieben?
Mr. Chair and Senator Skoy, that was the intention of the amendment. And it wasn't to try to not have any security testing happen. We were just concerned upon reviewing this, and I expressed this concern in the subcommittee to Senator Kiffmeyer, that we aren't sure what an annual audit entails or means. So if they're to that point, I think that the language in 2.30 and 3.1 encompasses that, but you know, it doesn't preclude that they can't work with the chief information officer or another security expert. But that to put that there must be an annual audit, it's not clear who's performing that audit. And as the Secretary of State's office can say, they're not sure that that's really necessary if they're going to provide ongoing testing and monitoring of the security of the system.
Thank you.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, I understand the annually audit, but I'm kind of questioning whether it is sufficient without that. I kind of think you need something more than just that the Secretary of State will provide the ongoing testing and monitoring, maybe regularly audit or something, but I'm not sure that taking that all out is a backup, is a guarantee that the things we do are not just for now, but for the next number of years. I think we ought to make sure that, I just keep thinking the security of these systems is some very big companies have been dealing with very big, big security flaws, and I just think we need something more than Secretary of State is going to do ongoing testing. I'm not sure what the answer is, but I'm not sure the annual audit is necessary, but I think we need something in there.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Stephen.
Ms. Frazier can speak to this, too. If it would bring the committee more comfort, we could say, and I'd need help with counsel to rewrite this amendment, but just delete the annually audit the security of the system, because, and Ms. Frazier can speak to this, I don't think that an annual audit is necessarily what needs to take place, and that there should be more extensive monitoring of the system than an annual audit.
Mr. Chair and members, Beth Frazier, the Deputy Secretary of State, and one piece of background that everyone should know is that we have had a statewide voter registration system going back to 1985. And so we have had one system that the counties have logged into, have monitored their own data that has been shared statewide for decades now. And so the introduction of online voter registration does not mean that we are suddenly putting information online. Information has been online for decades, and counties log into a central system and manage their own data. So data security has been the top priority of the office under the past three secretaries. This is not something new for the office, and so I just want to be sure that everyone is aware of that as we're looking at this amendment. Our IT staff do work very closely with Minute and do consult with them and did test the new tools that were launched last fall before they were launched. And, you know, we'll continue to work with Minute to make sure that all of the systems that we have, both for business and for voters, are secure and remain secure as technology changes. So I don't know whether a requirement for an annual audit makes sense, because we are continually monitoring the system, working with experts to ensure the security of the data.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Marty, then Senator Hinn.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Frazier, I guess as I said when I was commenting on it, I don't care if it's an annual audit or regular audit or something, and I'm not sure the audit is the main function of it, but the fact that you say it's been done for many years under several secretaries of state and so on, I just keep thinking that as good as even our state's chief information officer and everyone else is, I somehow get the sense that some of the biggest theft of data, financial data, some of our biggest multinational corporations have faced, and I'm sure they have huge teams of security, and I'm not sure we're going to ever match that, but it does seem to me that somehow or another requiring them to work with the state's chief information officer or other security experts is important. And again, I'm not focused on the audit being the thing, but just that we have somebody who's regularly reviewing this system, and maybe the last three secretaries of states have done good enough on this. I don't mind if the audit thing has changed. I just think there's got to be something where we're requiring them to work with the chief information officer.
Senator Stephen.
Mr. Chair, I'm hearing the concerns of the committee, so I'll withdraw the A7 amendment and at this time.
A7 is withdrawn.
So, Mr. Chair, if I may, again, the bill that's before you is the online voter registration system. The point of passing this legislation is to ensure that there is adequate security in the system that's in place to allow for the voters to be able to register online. And I think it's worth noting that there are provisions in this bill which actually have an increased level of security built into the online voter registration system versus registering by paper. Just to be clear for members who aren't on the subcommittee, this is not anything. Voters will not be able to vote online under any proposal in this bill. This just allows them, voters, which I think we've seen and heard from the public, that they want to be able to register to vote online.
Senator Marty, then Senator Hand, then Senator Newman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, I was not saying that you have to leave it as is. I'm just saying that I think that I think we need some of the stuff there, and if you, between now and floor or whatever, I mean, I don't know whether the audit is, an annual audit doesn't seem to be the way I would go about doing it, but I'm not an expert in any of this. So anyway, just keep working on it, because I think I can understand your concern with that language. I just think the amendment went too far.
Senator Hamm.
Mr. Chair, am I understanding that the amendment has been withdrawn?
Correct.
Then I have nothing at this point.
Senator Newman, on the bill as amended.
I apologize.
Senator Newman moves the A8 amendment.
I have a very bad habit of forgetting about the microphone. I apologize. The A8 amendment to help Senator Sieben is the other half of the Kiffmeyer amendment that was discussed in the Elections Committee. Senator Kiffmeyer had offered an amendment. The amendment was adopted, divided. We adopted one half. This is the half that did not pass, and it deals with a report to the legislature. I think that requiring the Secretary of State to report back to us what the Secretary of State has done with respect to online voting registration is really a very good idea. There are a lot of folks down here in St. Paul that were publicly concerned with the actions taken by the Secretary of State's office in designing and implementing an online voter registration system without coming to the legislature and seeking authority. What Senator Sieben's bill is doing is agreeing with and tacitly agreeing with what Secretary of State has done in the creation of the online voter registration system. And to be quite candid, we in the legislature do not know what the Secretary of State's office has done. They have offered us no information and no reports. We don't know what it cost. We don't know how it has been created. And it simply seems to me that it would be prudent on the part of the legislature to take a look at the system and see what it is that has been created and what has been implemented, because without any question in my mind, the creation of an online voter registration law is the purview of this legislature and not the purview of the Secretary of State's office. And for that reason, I am reoffering, in effect, the other half of Senator Kiffmeyer's requirement to report to the legislature. And the A8 amendment is, I believe, verbatim out of my online voter registration bill, which also requires the Secretary of State to come back to the legislature and give us some idea as to what has been done by the Secretary of State's office.
Senator Sieben, on the A8 amendment.
Mr. Chair, in an attempt to be somewhat brief, I'll try to outline some of the discussion we had around the report in the subcommittee. The first, as I said to Senator Newman and the committee, the subcommittee, is that as the chair of the committee, I am sensitive to the concerns that you have raised, Senator Newman, about the ongoing way that the system was implemented and the security of it. And told you, and I still believe that it's appropriate for the subcommittee to have hearings on this subject in the future. The second and the main point of why I think the Secretary of State's office explained why this was somewhat difficult to do is that in being too prescriptive over what you're mandating to be reported, you may be revealing information that, in fact, keeps the system secure. So, in other words, on 1.11, it says an explanation of all security measures of the system. Well, not that that's proprietary information necessarily, but if you are someone who would want to attempt to do something nefarious, having a report that explains the security measures to stop hackers from getting into the system may be a good way, a good place for you to go to look to begin to see how you would hack into a system. And so that's the second point, is that we don't want to report what we're trying to, in fact, prevent, which is a security breach. The third issue is that anytime you have a report, it requires money, and I was trying to be sensitive to not having to spend more of the limited money that we do have. So those would be the three main reasons that I would encourage the committee not to adopt the A8 amendment.
Senator Newman.
Very briefly, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Sieben. Two points I would make in response. I don't think that the requirement of reporting to the legislature would necessarily require that it be included in the report a manual on how to breach the system. That is not the intent, of course. And for the Secretary of State's office to allude to the fact that that is the reason for the requirement, I would say I think is a little disingenuous. I think what is being requested here is an explanation to us that in a manner that we can understand that the system that the Secretary of State has created and is now implemented is in fact secure from a standpoint of the folks who are registering are who they say they are, and the citizens who are relying on the system are not going to have their private data stolen. That's the reason for that request in that report, not as a manual on how to breach the system. As to this report requiring some money, you will note that there is no appropriation in the Sieben bill. In the bill that I had offered and was rejected, I specifically had an authorization to appropriate money to implement this system, and I did so for two reasons. Number one, if the legislature indeed is going to own this system, then we ought to pay for it. And there's no way for us to know how much it costs unless we appropriate the money. I also think that if we appropriate the money, then it is further evidence that this is our law. It's the action of the legislature that has created this system, not the action of the executive branch of our government. So for those two reasons, I had put in an appropriation in my bill. There is no such appropriation in this bill, and I think that there should be an appropriation. Well, that would be my response to Senator Sieben's points.
Any other discussion on the A8 amendment? Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the amendment that Senator Newman has offered. It seems to me that the argument that we're hearing is an argument to the legislature to say that the Secretary of State should not be under any oversight of the legislature. And I think that, to me, seems odd. I don't believe that this reporting requirement is burdensome or onerous. I think it does provide some assurance, as Senator Newman has pointed out, that we should be we should know what we're doing. We should know what is being done on behalf of the state with respect to voter registration. And it is, to me, I'm having a hard time understanding the argument that the Secretary of State's office apparently is making, saying we don't want that. We don't want that. We don't need that. You shouldn't have it. We should let the Secretary of State operate independently of any legislative oversight whatsoever. And I think that's an odd argument to make, especially given the track record of this particular Secretary of State, who seemed more than willing to push his authority beyond the limits of what the legislature has already provided. I think, too, it's, to me, significant that this is an amendment that was offered by a former Secretary of State who now serves in the legislature. And even in the previous amendment that was trying to withdraw the language that was already adopted, I think that, to me, that raises a question of why is the Secretary of State's office currently trying so hard to make sure there is no legislative oversight of what he's doing. And I am concerned about that. So I think this is a good amendment. I think we ought to ask for it, and I think Senator Newman makes a great point.
On the A8 amendment, any further discussion? Not all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Contrary, no?
No.
Motion does not prevail. A8 is not adopted. Any other discussion on the bill or other amendments? Seeing none, Senator Sieben moves that Senate file 2288 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Contrary, no?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, members. That concludes our